Hi, and welcome to another episode of Mike on MedTech, a show on the MedTech Matters podcast channel. I'm Sean Fetsky, Editor-in-Chief of MPO. Joining me, as always, is Mike Drews, President of Vascular Sciences. How are you today, Mike?
I'm well, Sean. Thank you for asking, and Happy New Year to you and to everybody in our audience. This is our first podcast of the new year, 2023.
Exactly. So for this episode, we're going to be doing a two-part series, actually. This is the first part on lab-developed tests, or LDTs, looking at the FDA's, there's a bit of a FDA regulatory controversy around it. Should they be regulated? Should they not be regulated? You know, this has been a debate that's been ongoing, and I think it even harkens back. I think a few years ago we touched on LDTs and mentioned it then as well. So, Mike, maybe you can start off today's conversation, part one, with a little bit of an explanation on why, this topic is of interest to us, why we selected it, what's happening that we decided to do this topic at this time?
Well, great question, Sean. And as always, thanks for the opportunity to have this very important and also very timely discussion. As you just pointed out, the LDT saga, as I like to call it, is not, in fact, new. It's been going on for many, many years, actually, since the Theranos fiasco, which we'll talk about later in our discussion. But the reason why we're talking about it right now is because just last month, in December of 2022, when Congress was debating the budget for the coming year, including the FDA budget for fiscal year 2023, they included a lot of things in the budget, but one thing that they did not include, which I think was very interesting and very important, is something called the VALID Act. And the VALID Act, as you know, Sean, as I'm sure some people in our audience know, got a lot of press in just the last couple of weeks of the year. The VALID Act is an acronym, and don't blame me for these acronyms, Sean. This is typical Washington, D.C. speak. The VALID Act is an acronym for Verifying Accurate Leading Edge IVCT Development. And within the VALID acronym, they use another acronym, IVCT. What is IVCT? IVCT is in vitro clinical tests. And to be honest, I don't know where the politicians got that phrase, because that's not a phrase that we use in the regulatory vernacular. We call these things in vitro diagnostics, or IVTs. In this particular case, they're calling them IVCTs, in vitro clinical tests. Perhaps, I'm guessing here, Sean, but perhaps to try to create some differentiation between IVDs, which FDA does regulate, as we'll discuss, and lab-developed tests, or in vitro clinical tests that they do not. So bottom line, there was a lot of debate in Congress before the end of the year, although interestingly enough, because this VALID Act did not pass, maybe there was not enough debate. Also interesting to note, Sean, not to get into too much politics, but obviously you cannot separate regulation from politics, and this is a perfect example of it because the regulation comes from politician. There was apparently a lot of bipartisan support for the VALID Act, but apparently not enough. And so the biggest obstacle why this was not included in the new FDA budget is that some people argued, and I guess they argued successfully, that this would be overly burdensome to the stakeholders who develop LDTs, specifically the laboratories, the hospitals, the academic medical centers, and so on. Interesting, Sean, not the companies. As a matter of fact, the companies did not oppose this. In fact, AdvaMed, the major medical device industry association, actually supported the VALID Act, but it was these other parties that opposed it, because they basically argued, and I'm not saying that I agree with them or not, this is just their argument, that requiring some form of FDA clearance or approval or something would be overly burdensome. In other words, forcing them to jump through all of these FDA hoops that they hadn't had to jump through before. And so the last thing that I'll mention in terms of your question, Sean, of why we're talking about this now, and feel free to jump in with any questions or comments, when will this pass? If it didn't pass this last month as part of the new budget, when will it pass? Well, it's interesting. I've already mentioned briefly in passing the relationship to the Theranos situation. When this will pass, Sean, I guarantee, is when another Theranos-like situation occurs in our healthcare system. That's unfortunately when this passes. And it's a regrettable, but I think very true notion, Sean, that oftentimes regulation is reactive as opposed to proactive. Here we have an opportunity to not be reactive and wait for another tragedy to occur, but actually try to prevent such tragedies from happening again in the past. But unfortunately, it hasn't happened, at least not yet. And in fact, the current FDA commissioner, who I have a lot of respect for personally, has announced even earlier this year that regardless of what Congress did not act on it, at least this time, FDA is going to try to regulate LDTs even without a congressional mandate. They've been trying to actually do this for a number of years already, Sean, without success. It might be possible that somebody figures out a way that they can do that, but I think the best solution to this problem is for Congress to clean it up, not for FDA. So I know I went through just a lot there, Sean. I'm sure you have either questions or comments. Feel free to chime in.
Yeah, so I want to start by just clarifying for certain, because I think I caught it, is that the VALID Act, which did not pass, would have put LDT tests or LDTs under the purview of the FDA to be regulated. But again, it did not pass. Is that accurate?
That portion of the budget did not pass. That's correct. And without getting into, you know, too much of the weeds here, I think at a high level, that's a fair statement. It would allow FDA to directly regulate LDTs as opposed to sort of indirectly or quasi-regulate them, and regulate them in two ways. Regulate them in terms of the development, like, for example, requiring a 510K clearance or a PMA approval or granting a de novo or something, but it would also allow them to regulate on the quality side, the accuracy, the reproducibility, the reliability, all those kinds of things. So the other thing that we have to be a little careful about, Sean, is overgeneralizing when we talk about regulatory, at least in this context. I don't mean limited regulatory to sort of the clearance or the approval process, but I'm also including on the quality side, because right now there's no quality oversight for LDTs either. And we'll talk about some of the reasons why as we continue. Does that help, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we go forward, though, you know, thank you for outlining basically why this is in the news, why this is significant. But before we go further, I just want to clarify what an LDT test is. So perhaps you can give an overview of what exactly we're talking about when we say LDT or lab-developed test.
Yeah, great question. So before talking specifically about lab-developed tests, let's take a half a step back and look at the broader category of an in vitro diagnostic or an IVD. So LDTs are usually a type of IVD. So what's an IVD? Well, an IVD in a regulatory sense, and I'm paraphrasing from the CFR, from the Code of Federal Regulations here, the definition of an IVD is a reagent or instrument or system that's intended for diagnosis of disease or a condition. So it's a reagent, instrument, or system intended for the diagnosis of disease or condition. They can also include a determination of the state of health. I love phrases like that, Sean. Why? Because I have no idea what that means, an IVD to determine your state of health. That almost sounds like a wellness device, but nonetheless, that's part of the CFR, in order to cure, mitigate, treat, or prevent a disease. And it's that last part, Sean, that I want to emphasize, in order to cure, mitigate, treat, or prevent a disease. Why is that important? Because without a doubt, nobody can argue that that does not clearly fit the CFR definition of a regulated medical device. The essence of a regulated medical device means something, anything other than a drug, that is intended to prevent, diagnose, or treat a disease, injury, or condition. And so IVDs, as I just defined them according to the CFR, clearly are regulated medical devices. That is, they fit the CFR definition of a medical device. And so because IVDs are regulated medical devices defined by the CFR, then like all other devices, they're subject to both pre-market, i.e. the clearance or the approval process, as well as post-market controls, i.e. the quality, the accuracy, the reproducibility, and so on that I mentioned before. Now, IVDs can also be subject to CLIA regulation as well. CLIA is another regulatory body, if you will. It's an acronym for Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments. Pardon me. And so there can be oversight from CLIA as well. But more importantly, or most importantly for our conversation right now, Sean, IVDs are regulated by the FDA as a medical device. And so what are some examples of in vitro diagnostics? It's a very, very, very broad category, Sean. Just a few examples. Things like pregnancy tests, things like COVID tests, things like HIV tests or glucose tests or urine tests, even tests for cancer. All of these are examples of in vitro diagnostics. These can be used either in a hospital or in a doctor's office or in an ambulance or even sold at home. You know, we're all familiar with especially COVID tests now that are used in the home. Those are in vitro diagnostics. Those are regulated by the FDA, oftentimes under an emergency use authorization as opposed to a 510K, but they are still regulated by the FDA. So that's a little bit of a understanding of the in vitro diagnostics before I go on to the question of what is an LDT, Sean, which is what you asked. Does that much make sense?
Yeah, and I'll just share what I was, you know, when I was introduced to IVD, you know, early on in medical device reporting coverage history, I was told simply that an IVD was a medical test that was performed on bodily fluid or tissue outside of the body. And that was basically the simple definition provided to me to at least give me an idea of what an IVD test was.
Yeah, I like that simple definition, Sean. I mean, after all, Einstein, very smart guy, Einstein said, if you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it well enough. So you're exactly right. In vitro diagnostics typically or historically have taken some kind of a sample from the body. It could be blood, it could be urine, it could be saliva, it could be, you know, lots of different things. And then analyze that in vitro, that is outside the human body or the living organism. However, and this is a topic perhaps of a different discussion, Sean, there are new technologies, some of which that I'm involved with right now, that are being developed that are what I call in vivo diagnostics. In other words, it's essentially an IVD, but it's being used inside your body, not outside your body. And suffice it to say, Sean, as I said, this is a topic of a completely different discussion probably, but we have no regulation whatsoever, at least not yet, on what I'm calling an in vivo diagnostic, or to mix the terminology even further, an in vivo in vitro diagnostic. So it does get kind of confusing, I'll admit, but this is another example where another problem that we often have with regulation is it's constantly backwards looking. It rarely is forward looking. In other words, it's looking at the technologies that we've had on the market in the past, or perhaps technologies that are coming onto the market right now, but rarely ever is the regulation forward looking in the sense of, you know, what technologies might we have in the future. But again, Sean, that's a topic of a different discussion.
Right. So now, getting back to LDTs, now you're going to, provide the synopsis on what those are specifically.
Yeah. So since we've talked about an IVD, and you've given, you know, what I think is a very good simple definition of an IVD, I know, Sean, you're a very experienced guy in this industry. Do you want to take a stab at it? What's the difference between an IVD and an LDT?
I'll tell you honestly, this is a definition I do not know. I was not given a simple definition for LDT. I was not given any definition for LDT, and that may be because they were not regulated, regulated medical devices, and as such, they did not fall under the arena of what my coverage involved. So this has always been a little bit of a, I don't want to say mystery, but certainly outside of my typical scope.
Well, let's see if we can demystify this just a little bit for you and for the rest of our audience, Sean, because it's really not as complicated as it might seem if you try to appreciate what I often call the regulatory logic of it. So an IVD, as we just talked about, is a test that's regulated by the FDA because it fits the CFR definition of a medical device. Simply put, an LDT, a laboratory-developed test, although from a technology perspective, they are most of the time a type of an IVD, a subset of IVD, they are not regulated by the FDA as a medical device. And so do you want to speculate, Sean, as to why, what's the justification for why FDA has historically not regulated LDTs? And I'll give you a hint. This is not recent. This goes back actually decades that FDA has not regulated LDTs. Do you want to speculate as to why?
My guess would be that they're not being used in those ways that you mentioned earlier in the definition of an IVD. So I'm going to say that they're not being used for diagnosis, prevention, et cetera, of a disease. So it leads me to believe that perhaps they're being used for research.
Well, great guess, Sean. And as always, I always applaud you for guessing. In some cases, your guess is 100% correct. In this particular case, unfortunately, not so much. Which is not a bad thing, by the way. I love it when people guess and they guess wrong. So not a criticism. On the contrary, thank you for guessing and being willing to be wrong. That's more than I can say about some people. In fact, a lot of laboratory-developed tests are used exactly for the purposes that you just described. In other words, to diagnose a disease, injury, or condition. The reason why LDTs have not been regulated by the FDA in the past is quite simple. The philosophical intent, if you will, of an LDT is something, a test that was developed in one particular laboratory or hospital or clinic for use only in that one particular laboratory or hospital or clinic. So let me repeat that. The philosophical intent of LDTs, the whole reason why LDTs exist and why they're not regulated by the FDA, is because they're supposed to be developed in one lab or hospital for use in that one lab or hospital. Now, again, I'm going to put you on the spot one more time, Sean. Why? What's the regulatory explanation for why FDA cannot regulate tests that are developed in a hospital for use in a hospital?
I'm gonna rely on one of my phrases that I learned from you, which is the FDA cannot regulate the practice of medicine. So I'm gonna say since they're developed in a hospital by hospital employees, that's deemed the practice of medicine. therefore the test cannot be regulated.
Ding, 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 bingo. Kudos to you. You hit the target, you know, right on, right in the center. That's exactly right. Because one could easily argue, again, I'm not saying that I agree or disagree, but one could easily argue that when a hospital develops a test in their own facility for their own use, that is the practice of medicine, just like pharmaceutical compounding, just like the reprocessing of medical reusable medical devices, just like in some cases 3D printing of medical devices. These are all iterations on the same theme, and that is that FDA does not regulate the practice of medicine. It's interesting to note, Sean, that in this decades of discussion and debate about LDTs, nobody has ever, you know, asked the question, well, if a company developed the same test, would the company be able to put it on the market without going through the FDA? I think the short answer is absolutely not. And so now, regrettably, as we'll talk about, Sean, now some companies are trying to develop tests, i.e. Theranos, but they're certainly not the only one, and put them out there as LDTs. But the thing to remember, Sean, is that this is a laboratory-developed test. This is not a company-developed test. Now, I know it sounds a bit like semantics, and probably it is, but that's an important differentiation. And then the last thing that I'll mention, Sean, and then, as always, you can follow up or we'll continue on. If the test is used solely within the laboratory and it's not distributed or sold to some outside lab or other healthcare facility, that's part of the FDA definition of a lab-developed test as well, which begs the question, and again, I don't want to refer to Theranos too many times here because we'll talk about that more later. But when the Theranos fiasco occurred several years ago, I was one of several people that were invited by FDA to talk about this. And one of the questions I brought up is, how do you define a laboratory? For example, I think the example that I used at FDA was the Mayo Clinic. The Mayo Clinic has multiple buildings, you know, multiple hospitals. Does that mean that if they develop a LDT in one building, they cannot use it in the building across the street? Or the Mayo Clinic also has facilities in different states, you know, in Minnesota and Arizona, I think in Florida as well, maybe some other places too. So if they develop an LDT in one particular place, does that mean that they can or cannot use it in some other place, even though it might be in a different state, as long as it's in their same institution? So there's a tremendous amount of gray area or wiggle room, as I like to call it, you know, to interpret the wording of this regulation. Does that make sense, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's frightening when you think about how large some of these hospital organizations are, and they have, you know, as you said, like, you know, locations in different states. I mean, they may even have, you know, locations in other countries. But then also what question comes to mind is what happens when these organizations merge? Can the LDTs at one organization, healthcare, you know, facility then be used across all the, you know, acquiring companies' locations, or vice versa? Can the acquiring company then roll out their LDTs to, you know, and then this is certainly a problem, and I can already give you a preview on which way I'm leaning, and that is LDT absolutely 100% should be regulated because of all these questions and potential concerns with them. But let's see if you know, maybe my mind will be changed. I doubt it, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, the only thing that I ask you and all of our audience to do, Sean, is just to keep an open mind. That's all. Just to keep an open mind. And I just want to remind you, as I mentioned a moment ago, we have to be a little bit careful with our terminology. We are talking about laboratory-developed tests. We are not talking about company-developed tests. Now, I don't want to get into the semantical discussion of if you have a, you know, a group of hospitals, is that being run by a company or something? No, that's not where I want to go. But I do think it's important that people understand that the philosophical intent of LDTs, and indeed, as we talked about, the whole justification for why FDA has not regulated these in the past, is because it is the practice of medicine. And when it's developed in one institution for use in that institution, that is the practice of medicine. But if a company develops the same test and sells it to a whole bunch of different hospitals or something, that's different.
Right, right. I will keep an open mind, but I definitely have this definitely raises an eyebrow.
Good.
So what is the purpose of these laboratories developing their own tests? Why, other than avoiding the cost of a company developed test and having to purchase that, why do labs develop their own LDTs?
Yeah, great question. And I've broken it into sort of two categories. There's two common scenarios where a lab may develop their own test. The first and the most common scenario is if they need to develop a new test. So, for example, they develop and they use an LDT because a commercial test to do the same thing is not currently available. And there are, in the area of genetic testing, for example, there are a litany of examples of LDTs that are basically, you know, genetic tests for rare diseases, like Huntington's disease, for example. You know, oftentimes it's not in a for-profit company's best interest to develop a test like this because, quite frankly, the market is not big enough. And so, you know, the most common scenario for a hospital developing their own LDT is to meet an unmet clinical need, like, for example, a genetic test for a rare disease. The other scenario where companies develop LDTs is when they need to make a modification to an existing test. In other words, you have a test already on the market. Maybe it is commercially available. Maybe it's even gone through the FDA and has a 510K or de novo or something like that. But maybe that test is not applicable to a particular population or subpopulation of patients where that particular hospital has people that represent. So they need to modify that test in order to use it for them. And interesting, in that last scenario, Sean, FDA considers any FDA-approved commercial test that is modified in any way by a lab, not by a company, but by a lab or a hospital, they now consider that test to be an LDT. So again, I think this is an important point. You have a device on the market, a IVD, for example, let's say it's got a 510K, that's close to what the hospital needs, but not exactly. So they modify it now because the hospital has modified it, not the company. The hospital has modified it. Now that modified 510K device now becomes, in the eyes of the FDA, an LDT. What's the justification for it? Once again, it's the hospital that's doing the modification, not the company. In other words, this is, as we just talked about, the practice of medicine, and the FDA doesn't regulate the practice of medicine. I think it's interesting to note, Sean, and maybe this is even, you know, a little bit hypocritical, that if a company wants to modify a test, wants to modify a device that's already on the market, you and I have talked about change management many times over the years, Sean, they usually have to notify the FDA of that modification via a special 510K or a PMA supplement, or alternatively, if they choose not to notify the FDA, they would handle that through a letter to file. In any event, the modification would require some testing to show that the device is still safe, effective, yada, yada, yada. And yet, if a hospital modifies the test, there's no requirement, there's no oversight, there's no testing. In other words, hypothetically speaking, Sean, the hospital could modify the test without doing any kind of a check to make sure that the modification is, you know, safe and effective and so on. I would like to think that most responsible professionals would never do that, but unfortunately, there's no oversight of that. There's no requirement for them to do that. Does that make sense, Sean?
It does, but it's frightening because, I mean, as you've pointed out in the past, you know, it's not the FDA that presents he necessarily presents the issue in this case, and obviously not at all in this case, because as you said, it becomes an LDT when it's modified. But what about that liability lawyer or the lawyer that's working with a patient who is harmed, or you know, there's a lawsuit brought up based around an LDT that was ultimately a modified commercial test. A commercial IVD that was modified by a hospital, the original manufacturer of that test is absolutely going to be named in the lawsuit. And because there is no oversight, no one was checking to make sure the hospital was doing the modification appropriately and safely and ensuring accuracy.
And actually, that's a very good point, Sean. And since you started to open that door, let me go through just a little bit further. Imagine this not-so-hypothetical scenario. Let's say that a legitimate medical device company puts out an in vitro diagnostic onto the market. They've done all the things that they were required to do, including going through the FDA and getting a 510K. A hospital, for whatever reason, decides to modify their 510K device. Let's also assume further that the company is made aware of the hospital modification, and let's say that the company has some, let's call them concerns as to the nature of this modification and whether, in fact, that device would still be safe and effective and so on. Now, what kind of an obligation, if any, does the company have to go to the hospital and say, hey, we understand that you have modified our device. Okay, as a hospital, you're able to do that as an LDT, but we have some technical concerns about whether that's a legitimate modification. You know, I think you see where I'm going with all this, Sean. So this is a I've said for years that the area of LDTs is a regulatory quagmire for many, many reasons. It's also a product liability quagmire for many, many reasons as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's certainly not hard to follow that string. So I think you know, you've provided a very comprehensive definition and you know, did kind of hint at some examples, but maybe you can clearly provide just a couple examples of LDTs.
Yeah, great question, Sean. So I gave a number of examples of in vitro diagnostics earlier. You're going to hear some of exactly the same examples for LDTs as well. So examples of LDTs include a lot of the chemistry tests that we use, for example, for measuring blood glucose or a level of a protein in the blood or some other bodily fluid other than blood. Flu tests. For example, intended to detect the presence of influenza virus in their respiratory tract or something like that. Drug tests performed using mass spectroscopy, for example, are another example of laboratory developed tests. The important thing to understand here, Sean, is that the application, in other words, the labeling or indication, and oftentimes the technology is exactly the same as the IVD, which is the regulated test. But if this test is developed in the lab, in the hospital or clinic, at least theoretically for use in that hospital or clinic, then it's an LDT, not an FDA-regulated medical device.
Okay. All right. So we've established that, you know, LDTs are not, we went through the Valid Act and we've established that LDTs are not regulated. And as you said, they ultimately may be, and like you said, it may be at a point when it's already too late for a patient or several patients who are harmed, or there's, you know, some issue, you know, hearkening back to the Theranos fiasco. How might that look? You know, who would be involved? You know, how might that be done in an effective way where an LDT would be regulated by the FDA?
Once again, great question, Sean. And I think we have to be a little careful about overgeneralizing or oversimplifying here. I do not want to give you or our audience the impression that LDTs are not regulated at all. In fact, that would be a factually incorrect statement. They are, in fact, regulated, but regulated at a very, very low level. It's kind of like, a class one exempt medical device. It's regulated in that case by the FDA, but a very, very low level. It's not regulated to the extent that a class two 510K or de novo, or certainly a class three PMA or HDE would be required. In terms of who regulates them, as we've already talked about, FDA does not regulate LDTs for a few different reasons. First of all, as we discussed, it's the practice of medicine, or at least one could argue it's the practice of medicine, which is beyond FDA's bailiwick. The other justification is that FDA has said for many years, actually up until the Theranos situation, that FDA was going to use its enforcement discretion in the past. Because these LDTs were relatively simple technology, relatively low risk, and so on. And enforcement discretion is one of these interesting legal buzz phrases, Sean. It's not saying that FDA will not regulate these. It's saying that they will not regulate them right now. But FDA does reserve their right to regulate them in the future, because as we talked about, they clearly meet the CFR definition of a medical device. This phrase of enforcement discretion, Sean, should sound familiar to you, because this is exactly the same argument that was used with the clinical decision support software, that FDA said just in a recent guidance a few months ago that they're going to use their ORF enforcement discretion not to regulate clinical decision support software, at least not right now. But what that means is they're going to kind of keep an eye on the situation, and they reserve the right to regulate clinical decision support software in the future if and when something changes. And I said, publicly back then when that guidance came out, that they will, FDA will regulate these softwares when a company, kind of like there's a, equivalent of a Theranos situation, comes along. So FDA doesn't regulate LDTs. So the question is, who does? Well, I mentioned earlier the Clinical Laboratory Improvement Amendments, the CLIA, does regulate LDTs. There are requirements. I don't want to go into them in a lot of detail, but CLIA does say that the hospital needs to demonstrate how well the LDT performs certain performance specifications, for example, accuracy, which is the ability of the test to most closely measure the true value of a substance that they're trying to measure, or precision, the repeatability of the test result, the specificity and the sensitivity, which has to do with the ability of the test to detect the substances, especially at low levels, or the ability of the test to correctly detect or measure a substance in the presence of other substances. This is what we call interference testing. Interestingly enough, Sean, all of the requirements from CLIA that I just mentioned, they are all part of the FDA expectations as well, although admittedly not to the same degree. So I find it interesting when some people argue that, well, the reason why LDTs should not be regulated by the FDA is because it would be overly burdensome for these hospitals to jump through these FDA hoops. Well, although there is more paperwork involved, Sean, the reality is that from a technical perspective, from a biological, from a biomedical engineering perspective, the regulatory burden of an IVD and an LDT should be exactly the same. In other words, either from a biology and engineering perspective, the test is safe and effective, or it's not. It doesn't matter if it's a 510K or LDT or anything else. That's a technologically determined question. So FDA has tried to put out some guidance in the area of LDTs. In fact, back in 2014, FDA put out two guidances specifically, and we can, in the notes to the discussion, Sean, we can put references to these. But these were two specific guidances to give FDA the authority to regulate LDTs. As a matter of fact, one of the guidances is from 2014 is framework for regulatory oversight of laboratory developed tests. So FDA has tried to do this in the past. Unfortunately, when those two guidances came out, Sean, several years ago, they were very controversial, both inside the FDA as well as outside of the FDA, for all of the reasons that we've been discussing, not the least of which is the practice of medicine. And that's why, to really clean up this discussion, situation, and as we'll talk about in part two of our discussion later, it's probably going to take some act from Congress to give FDA the statutory authority to do this, as opposed to them doing it themselves.
Yeah, absolutely, and I definitely look forward to that part of the conversation. I think we're going to stop here, because I think we've done a good job of using part one as the definition, clarifying IVD, LDT, explaining the regulatory challenges and concerns around there. In part two, we'll look at, the relationship between LDTs and the Theranos fiasco, and, what the situation was there, the relationship there, as well as making recommendations to device makers of IVDs, and how that, what the situation is there versus an LDT, and overall give the overall takeaways as we always do at the end of every podcast. But for now, I think we're going to wrap up part one. And look forward to sharing part two with you in a few weeks. But until next time, I'd like to thank Mike for doing such a fantastic job of explaining LDTs as well as IVDs and the concerns there. And I'd like to thank you, the listener, for tuning in. But until next time, this has been Sean Fenske, Editor-in-Chief of MPO, saying thanks for listening.